Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is our old friend and correspondent and a man we honor, Albany Bureau Chief for the New York Daily News, Ken Lovett. Welcome back, Ken.
Good to be here.
You really are on top of all of it. So I guess the first thing I want to start up about is the perceived by many of us Andrew Cuomo, Bill de Blasio competition. How serious is this?
Well, I think it's serious in that it's a competition. The governor doesn't like to share the limelight. But I don't think as of yet it's personal. I do believe they have a friendship that goes back, you know, back to the Clinton administration when Cuomo was the HUD secretary and he hired Bill de Blasio to work for him. They've been close ever since. But, you know, friendship aside, they differ on a lot of issues right now. You know, everything from pre-K to the DREAM Act to taxation issues, you know, and really they agree on pre-K, but how to fund it is the big difference.
You just said something that I found fascinating, and we can go back to pre-K, but what's the difference on the DREAM Act, and what is the DREAM Act?
The DREAM Act would be, there's a push to create a state DREAM Act, which would allow state tuition assistance programs to fund the college education for kids whose parents are undocumented immigrants. It's a controversial plan in that the Senate Republicans in particular don't want to use taxpayer money on people who they say are illegal immigrants. And the governor has come out and said he's in favor of a federal DREAM Act, which is also being discussed, but he's never taken a position despite pressure from the Hispanic and African-American communities. He's never come out one way or the other for a state DREAM Act, but he hasn't proposed it. So Bill de Blasio told a group of Hispanic and Black lawmakers this past week that when he was up in Albany, yes, he thinks they should not only do the DREAM Act, but they should revisit what Elliot Spitzer did, which was allow driver's licenses for illegal immigrants.
Ken Lovett, as a progressive, I know that de Blasio would be for this, but why is Cuomo against it? He's got a left flank also, and he saw what happened in the last federal election where the Hispanic population really came out for the Democrats and the progressive Democrats in droves. Why would he take that risk?
Because I think it's political. You know, Bill de Blasio won with a large mandate in a very liberal city. You know, what's it, 6-1 Democrat to Republican. His constituency is a lot different than Andrew Cuomo as governor. And so as governor, you know, he wants to bring up a big total this year when he runs for reelection. Those issues don't poll well upstate and in a lot of the suburbs.
You know, I've known a lot of people who worked for Andrew Cuomo at HUD, and he was regarded as a very tough boss. I haven't heard many people going out of their way to say, you know, he was really great to me and personally and the rest of it, quite the contrary. So I'm wondering whether or not there really is the kind of close relationship between de Blasio and Andrew that some people talk about.
Well, I do think they've kept in touch over the years. I do think they've each relied on each other. You know, de Blasio helped Cuomo when he first ran in 2002, his unsuccessful run against Carl McCall. You know, Andrew Cuomo helped de Blasio when he ran for city council for the first time. And even some of Cuomo's people helped de Blasio this time around when he ran for mayor. I do think there's a friendship there. But the thing about Andrew Cuomo is he wants to be the supreme one in the state. You know, we've said before, he doesn't necessarily play well with others. And I think you're seeing that kind of play out now. I've kind of been surprised at how hard his people have gone on de Blasio, given, you know, he just got in a couple of weeks ago.
Well, de Blasio is a progressive. At least he's a self-styled progressive now. We know that. Mm-hmm. Elizabeth Warren comes into town. She spends time with him. She is, of course, the darling of the progressives in the United States. But Andrew Cuomo is not a self-styled progressive, although who knows what would happen in the future, you know, depending on things.
I think, you know, it's funny. Two things, really. One, I think a lot of people love to compare Andrew Cuomo to his father, you know, three-term governor, former governor Mario Cuomo.
Sure.
But that's the wrong comparison. The true comparison is Cuomo and his former boss, Bill Clinton.
Absolutely.
Both are kind of, they like to triangulate the issues. They want to kind of come to compromises. They want to reach across the aisle because they think that works well. It's not necessarily an ideology with them, where with de Blasio so far, it's true ideology. The other thing is, I think de Blasio represents a different kind of threat to Cuomo than he's had in his first 3 years. Up until now, Cuomo has had an uneasy relationship with the progressive wing of the party, with the liberal wing of the party. However, really, there was no one else to go to because, you know, you had a Republican slash independent mayor in Bloomberg. So every so often it would be annoying. The Black, Hispanic, and Puerto Rican caucus would complain about something and he'd meet with them and try to deal with it. Some advocacy groups. But now you have the mayor of New York City, the largest city in the world, who is a bona fide progressive, who's coming out with all these issues and who's really giving a voice to a lot of the issues that people in the legislature, Democrats in the legislature, have either pushed or have wanted to push for years. And now you have someone with that kind of juice backing them. And that's going to create, at least if not a personal, certainly a political tension.
Well, we could go in many directions here, which I love. Ken Lovett, you always bring such knowledge to this field. But do you ever see a time when it could be, looking in your crystal ball, that these two guys face off against each other for the presidency of the United States?
I don't. I don't. Because I've said I believe Andrew Cuomo's best shot at the presidency is 2016. And I don't think that's going to happen. Because what's going to happen is, if he doesn't do it in 2016, his next chance is 2020. So now, two things can happen. Sure. One, Hillary Clinton or another Democrat could win the presidency, and then he can't run in 2020.
Right.
In 2024, no one's going to remember Andrew Cuomo.
Or he'll have lived out his welcome as governor of New York, which is what happens.
And then you have issues, and, you know, especially if he goes into a third term, which I'm not even sure he would run for, but if he did, third terms were brutal on his father, on Pataki, on Bloomberg. So, you know, that's a problem. And then on top of that, just, he's going to wear thin, you know? I mean, he's going to have issues. The legislature's going to go at him. 2016's his best shot, and I don't think he's going to take it.
Well, I would agree with you. I don't think he'll take it. He told me he wouldn't take it. I'm sure he's told you he wouldn't take it. Nevertheless, he'd take it. If Hillary didn't run, then you really would see him coming in.
Although we have yet to see him really start doing the things you would expect him to do, even if he was keeping the door open. Yeah. He's done very little. I mean, granted, he went to L.A. recently and he did a big Hollywood fundraiser, but there's been very little outreach. And I think he suspects that if he wants to do it, he can kind of jump in and he has, you know, enough fundraising prowess. But it'll be interesting because he really is waiting a long time.
So let's go back to pre-K between the two men.
Sure.
You know, here is Cuomo being brilliant, strategic, because on comes de Blasio with pre-K and says, okay, I'll give you your pre-K, but we're not going to tax for it. And de Blasio says, oh, yes, I insist on our taxing for it. Now, that was a red flag if I ever saw one.
Yeah, I think depending on how you look at it, I mean, the mayor was quite honest, and in my opinion, it was somewhat of a tactical error. He was asked at a budget hearing this week if basically the city has a $2.5 billion surplus, you know, why not use that for pre-K? And then on top of that, the governor is saying, we will give you all the money you need as fast as you need it. Because the governor is very skeptical at the timetable that de Blasio has set for pre-K. He says it'll be phased in over 5 years, the governor says, and he doesn't think it'll be as quick as de Blasio, who says he can do it in, you know, 2 years, basically. So he was asked that, and basically what de Blasio says is, I don't want to touch the surplus because that money is going to go toward, I got to deal with these unions. You know, all their contracts are up, and there's a lot of people who believe he's going to give the unions who helped get him elected retroactive pay raises. You know, they really waited out Bloomberg, and Bloomberg wouldn't give them raises. So now this $7 billion problem, some estimate, falls in the lap of the new mayor, and he's got a $2.5 billion surplus. So he said that. However, it raises the question. You know, you have a $2.5 billion surplus. The governor is saying,
in New York City.
In New York City, the governor is saying, we'll give you the money as fast as you need it. It'll be there. How, we don't know, but that's what he's saying. It kind of boxes de Blasio in. Are you raising taxes just to raise taxes? Or is this really about pre-K? Or is it about, you know, wealth redistribution?
The teachers are casting an eye on Andrew Cuomo, suggesting that perhaps when he says he'll come up with the money, it's got to come from somewhere, the $2 billion, that it may be coming from other other parts of education.
Yeah, they feel that districts are being shortchanged and they would have gotten more money. And let's not forget, this is the opening salvo from the governor. You know, governors don't come in with huge amounts of money expecting that it'll just be accepted. So they deliberately come in low, and they know the legislature will add to it. And certainly, you know, that's what the governor would argue. Now, you know, de Blasio's argument in favor of this, what he wants to do is raise the city income tax on the wealthy, on those making $500,000 and above. Sure. His argument is it would give us a steady, reliable stream of income that the state can't guarantee. You know, if the state goes into the tank next year, or, you know, the numbers, sure, the revenues aren't what's projected, he's afraid that they'll go back on the promise to fund pre-K. And to be fair, we've seen that because Pataki approved pre-K expansions and then never funded it as time went on. So he says we need a reliable base of funding, and that's why we need to tax. The governor's in a re-election year. He knows the Senate really doesn't want to do this, the Senate Republicans. So he's saying, no, we can do this without taxing.
Now you've gone and done it. I want to talk to you about the Senate. The Senate is made up of, you know, there are more Democrats than Republicans. We all know about the four Democrats who went across the aisle and made their separate deal. But there's some speculation that de Blasio is with the progressive Democrats, who we don't think Cuomo likes that much, in the Senate, because he would then have to play the brake on the whole system, whereas Dean Skelos and the others can be counted on the Republicans to say no. So what's the specter? What's the possibility of de Blasio getting out there and helping to elect Senate candidates so that the Democrats are in charge of the Senate?
It certainly wouldn't be surprising, but they need a lot of seats, because as it is right now, by just breakdown of party, the Democrats have the majority of the chamber.
Exactly right.
The problem is you've got 25 mainline Democrats, traditional Democrats. You've got four quote-unquote independent Democrats. You have two Democrats, we'll call them the indicted independent Democrats, who nobody wants to be part of. And then you have a single Democrat, Simcha Felder, who's actually sitting with the Republicans. So you actually have five Democrats who are sitting with the Republicans or working with the Republicans. So it's not just about getting the seats, but you have to get enough seats that you neutralize those five votes, and that's going to be very tough in a single year.
Yeah, well, now, if such campaigns begin, where would you expect to see Andrew Cuomo? Helping the Democrats get more seats so they would be in charge, or dragging his feet?
I would think he will back a number of Democrats he knows can win, but I don't think he would necessarily go hard to change the makeup of the Senate. Because if he felt that it's a guarantee the Senate Dems were going to take over, I think it would be one thing.
He'd be out there.
He'd be out there. But if he feels he has to come back next year and work with Republicans who you just completely alienated because you tried to get rid of them, I don't think he's going to do that. He certainly hasn't shown an inclination for that since taking office.
Certainly has not. You know, an interesting thing happened. Danny Donahue of the CSEA, the state's largest public service union, took to his members and called Governor Cuomo a lot of names, including a monkey. And this maybe was a slow day for the press, but this became an important story.
Well, it shows that there's still tensions between the unions. They're not, the public sector unions, they don't like him. They feel that he's, you know, not only cut their sizes in terms of, you know, cutting employees, he feels that he doesn't show them any respect. I thought the monkey term was interesting, though, because, and I don't know if it's deliberate or not, but it certainly raised an eyebrow for me that Mario Cuomo once referred to the legislature during a State of the State address in front of them as monkeys, you know, sit there and applaud like monkeys, to which then Assemblyman Tony Seminario started yelling at him from the floor.
I remember that.
At that reaction.
So I don't know. Out that Seminario then went to jail.
And died in prison, yeah. But not at that point. But I just found that I didn't know if the link was there, because he was, Danny Donahue, not only referred to him as a monkey, but he referred to him as Mario Cuomo's kid. So I don't know if that was a little tweak at him over that.
Well, I've always liked Danny Donahue, I'll be honest with you. But there are people who said, well, why would he want to alienate the governor? That's your question.
The answer is because they're already fighting. I mean,
and because he's the head of the union.
And because he's the head of the union who has to say, look what's happening with the teachers union. There's a civil war going on there because people felt that he acquiesced too much to the governor, Dick Iannuzzi, the current president of the state teachers union. And now he's facing a real serious challenge that he could be toppled in the next few weeks.
So that's the reason why, if you're Danny Donahue, the head of the CSEA, you call Andrew Cuomo a monkey, because you're not playing to everybody else. You're playing to your union members.
Absolutely. That's what union leaders do, right?
Yeah. And that's an interesting story about Dick Iannuzzi, another man I like a lot. Why is he being opposed?
Well, they feel he hasn't done enough to stand up to the governor, you know, whether it was the teacher evaluation system, whether he was too slow to get on this Common Core curriculum bandwagon, the opposition
against
right now,
it, yeah.
to how it's being implemented. They feel that he hasn't really fought with the governor, that he was afraid to. And, you know, Iannuzzi was like, look, you know, the guy's kind of vindictive, and he didn't want to alienate the governor like Donahue was willing to do, obviously, but it may cost him now.
I see that Nassau County Prosecutor Kathleen Rice, who we've had on this program and who in this way is sitting in where you're sitting and, you know, is a very attractive candidate for many reasons, is going to run for Congress from Long Island, Representative McCarthy's seat.
Yes.
What are her chances?
Oh, I think it's very good. The district is heavily Democratic, and she is the most popular Democrat in the county.
Right.
She's the only really elected countywide Democrat right now.
District attorney.
She's the DA, but she's the only elected in Nassau County. She's the only elected countywide Democrat. She knows how to raise money. She is popular, and I think she's got an excellent chance. Sources close to her told me when the news came out, she is now going to step down as co-chair of the Moral Commission. And she says, you know, people close to her say, well, it may be a conflict if she didn't, she's worried. But you know what? I think it's a relief for her because this thing has been an albatross around her neck. There's been a lot of bad publicity for her because the truth is she was criticizing a system that she was really not only ensconced in, but worked so well. This is a woman who criticized the campaign finance system and yet is one of the biggest receiver of contributions, not in Nassau County, but statewide. She's in the top 10.
You're so right. The governor, let's go over that for a second, appoints a Moreland Act Commission. You wrote a story, which I think ought to get a Pulitzer this year, in which you talked about how they were sending in orders. The governor's office was sending in orders to the Moreland Act Commission about who should get subpoenaed and who shouldn't. And there she's sitting, and she wants to be an independent DA. And now, she gets out from under this, as you point out, and it has to be a relief for her.
I definitely think it's a relief for her because she's keeping her job, not only as the DA, but she's keeping her job, her position, as the president this year of the statewide DA's association. So that one's okay. But she's giving this one up because this has been nothing but a headache. It's really blown back on her, the other co-chairs, people who've worked for it. I think a lot of the DAs privately regret having done this because it was political from the start. And I think they regret that it's tarnished them as a group.
Let's go to casinos. Explain to all of us, because we're not always listening as carefully as we should, what the law is and where there are likely to be casinos.
Well, the law is, which there was a constitutional amendment approved in November, it allows up to 7 casinos within New York State. However, a separate law that was passed by the legislature says that for really the first 7 years, it'll be 4 casinos all located north of New York City.
It's a big fight between Shelley Silver and the governor kept saying, we want them upstate to generate business.
No, Silver was fine with that. Silver and his members didn't want it in New York City in highly densely populated areas. So that was okay. But, you know, the thinking is 2 of them are going to go to the Catskills. One of them's going to go to the Capital Region. You know, Saratoga is a likely choice, although it's interesting because the governor...
Voters in Saratoga aren't too happy about it.
No, and they voted heavily against the constitutional amendment. But the governor in this case did not add a provision within the constitutional amendment that there would be a local referendum on it. Does the community want it?
My state.
And a lot of states,
you have to vote for it.
So, Saratoga's looking good, or somewhere, Rensselaer in Albany County, or Rensselaer County, excuse me, near Albany, also wants it, so we'll see. And then the southern tier is expected to get one instead of fracking.
We'll go to that next. So who picks where it goes?
There will be a siting committee that is, that's been established and that supposedly within the next few weeks or months, they will get proposals from there. They expect to, and this is going to shock you, Alan, they expect to start announcing where these are going to go in October, sometime in the late fall, right before the election. And don't forget, this is the governor's number one economic development agenda item was casinos, which some people question.
So you have a siting commission, and you're an expert on groups which call in place, what the governor calling in place. Siting commission, but the governor will have some influence here.
You would think so, although I would stress that given the issue and given what you've seen in other states, and if the governor has national ambitions, you'd want to play above board with this one, because there's been a lot of times elsewhere where people end up in handcuffs over casino gambling, and I don't think he wants to see anyone close to him ending up that way.
Yeah. Well, the casinos aren't doing all that well right now around the country. There are some that are having real problems. Are we too late to the game in New York?
You know, I've been covering the Capitol for 20 years. And,
really?
And
you don't look it.
And it's been an issue of casinos. When I got here, it was an issue for 20 years for the Catskills before that. New York is late. And the reality is, not only do we have a bunch of them already here, whether it's Racinos or the Indian casinos, I think there's 14 total of everything. But on top of that, Canada over the border has it. Massachusetts has them. Connecticut has them.
Jersey.
New Jersey has them. So the question is, are we over, you know, have we reached the saturation point? A lot of people might say yes. And whether or not then the upstate casinos, which, you know, the governor is saying should draw tourism dollars, will they draw in people from out of the regions, or will it be locals spending their local money and losing it at casinos? That's going to be what we're going to have to see.
Okay, the last thing, as I promised, let's talk about fracking.
Not much to talk about.
No, it's clear to me, at least to me, that the governor got bit on the ankle by the anti-fracking people and said, I'm not going to touch this. And so he's got this health commissioner, Shaw, out there, quote, studying it to death.
Bob Dylan had the never-ending tour. This is the never-ending health study. It just won't end. You know, at one point they said it'll be a few weeks, and then it's launched into months and years. And Joseph Martens, the head of the Department of Environmental Conservation, you know, Cuomo's appointee, told a budget hearing this week that he has no plans to basically sign any kind of fracking order this year. And that, of course, takes the governor right past the election, so it becomes less of an issue.
Well, do you think that this is a governor who will hold it off until after the election and then go for it, for fracking?
Perhaps, especially if he's not seeking a third term, maybe as a pilot. I mean, it's the one issue that we've really seen Andrew Cuomo dither over. Usually, you know, he's been so decisive on a lot of things, and, you know, certainly the gun law cost him, you know, support upstate in particular.
Very courageous.
But this issue, he just doesn't know what to do. The polls are split. As a matter of fact, it's a plurality, you know, are against fracking. But there's a lot of pressure from upstate where they need the jobs, and yet there's a lot of pressure from the environmentalists who don't want this. And he just doesn't seem to know what to do, so he wants to punt it past the election. Now, the Republicans will use it against him in the election, saying, you know, hey, he's costing us tens of thousands of jobs in
and
the southern tier.
And even his own president wants it.
Even his own president wants it. But by not taking a stance, the opposition will be muted, because there's still hope on both sides that he'll do what they want him to do.
Yeah. Well, Ken Lovett, you're still having fun?
Yeah, absolutely.
I love it. Okay, so that was not a pun. So we are out of time. Our guest has been the incredible Albany columnist and bureau chief of the New York Daily News, Ken Lovett. Ken, thanks so much for joining us. Keep doing what you're doing. You are by far the best of our Albany interpreters. Appreciate it so much.
Thank you.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.